They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Some consternation in corporate boardrooms today after the Obama administration makes it tougher to use a foreign address to lower U.S. corporate taxes. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. There is a popular maneuver these days where a U.S. company merges with a foreign company so it can pay foreign cheaper taxes. These are called inversions, and they're legal. But critics, including the U.S. Treasury Secretary, call this tax avoidance. Two times before, the federal government tried to crack down, yet the inversions continued apace. But yesterday, the Treasury Department changed some rules that may dampen the ardor for inversions, so much so that a huge pharmaceutical inversion, Pfizer of New York merging with Allergan of Ireland, could unravel. To help us understand the Treasury's move, let's turn to Robert N. Williams, senior fellow at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center.
Most of what the government's done is tried to put a brake on the action without actually stopping it. The issue really revolves around whether the administration on its own can act to stop these inversions.
Do you think this late yesterday got the company's attention?
Well, it certainly did in the case of the Pfizer-Allergan merger. The particular rules that Treasury is now putting in place seem to affect that merger more than it might have affected previous mergers. The mergers that have occurred over the last 3 years in determining whether you qualify under the rules for inversion. And those rules have to do with how much of the new firm is owned by Americans. The Americans have to own somewhere between 50 and 60% to get the maximum benefit from the inversion. They were trying to make an American company look like a foreign company for the purposes of tax liabilities.
There are also new rules about the foreign company lending money to the U.S. part of this. Apparently make these inversions less attractive. How's that work?
The main issue in inversions is trying to get advantage of the foreign tax laws and tax rates. The foreign portion of the firm loans money to the American portion. The Americans pay interest on those loans and can deduct that interest against their American profits. That reduces the American profits, and that means you pay less tax in the United States. The interest is taxable in the other country, but at a lower rate. So you've moved your profits from the high-tax United States into the low-tax other countries.
Well, that would be awesome. It's like if my wife were living in a low-tax place like the Cayman Islands, and she lent me her husband, and I could deduct the interest against my taxes, everybody would be happy in this situation. But it sounds like the Treasury Department is clamping down on that.
The foreign countries get more revenue because money's over there, and they're receiving the tax payments. The individual firms pay less tax overall. The only institution that's hurt is the American Treasury that gets less revenue.
Robert M. Williams is a senior fellow at the Tax Policy Center. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
Probably met some conservative bankers in your time, blue suit, country club, Republican. Today, a liberal bank. Amalgamated Bank calls itself a progressive bank, counting among its clients the Democratic National Committee, Hillary Clinton's campaign, super PACs that back Hillary Clinton. It is majority owned by labor unions and wants banking to be boring. Keith Mestrich is the president of Amalgamated Bank. Mr. Mestrich, good morning.
Good morning, David.
A progressive bank. Oxymoron alerts are going off among our listeners. What does that mean in your case?
It means that we are a bank that is very embedded in a set of values that adhere to a progressive philosophy in this country. It means that banking is not just the purview of the rich or wealthy corporations, but it's the kind of institution that goes back to a set of ideals based around trust and empowerment and holding a set of ideals about what this country is really about. And more importantly, we have a $40 billion trust business that invests in almost every company in the country. And we've historically been shareholders who have brought actions against companies to hold them to a high level of corporate accountability.
if you exercise that power as essentially an owner of those companies, that can be a force for change.
It absolutely can. It can give you an opportunity to file a shareholder resolution, which other people can vote on. Sometimes you can bring litigation against companies, compelling them to do certain things. You can fight for representation on the board. There's lots of tools that you can have at your disposal to hold companies accountable.
You would like to restore trust in the banking system. And after the 2008 collapse, we heard from bankers who didn't want to admit in social situations that they were bankers. That suggests a lack of trust.
There's absolutely a lack of trust. Many people across this country, with good reason, blame the banking industry for being a significant contributor to the financial crisis in 2008. The banking industry had gotten out of control. Investment banking took over and basic community banking, depositing money, lending money out into communities so that, businesses and institutions can grow, had become sort of de rigueur and boring, and a lot of people weren't making a lot of money doing that. We need to get back to that. Regulation's not the enemy. There is a regulatory framework in this country that oftentimes gets maligned by many other bankers or those on the political right. But the reality is we need a system that keeps the banking system safe and sound in this country. That means the bank examiners need to come in, get under the covers, make sure that we're engaged in a series of practices that protect people's financial resources.
But you can't love all regulation. I mean, there's some of the new regulations that came in through Dodd-Frank that are hurting some of the smaller banks, at least it's argued.
The regulations in Dodd-Frank that are really aimed at the small banks are aimed at providing better consumer protections. Without a doubt, we need to have those. Do they sometimes overreach? Of course, but let's have a real debate about it, not just throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Keith Mestrich is president of Amalgamated Bank. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.